Meeting of House Fisheries Committee will come to order at 10:05. It's Thursday, March 26, 2015. I'm going to ask you to kindly make sure your cell phones are turned off. EQ, we have members present. Representative Christ Tompkins, Representative Heron, Representative Foster, and myself, Chair Stutes. Let the record please reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. We're also joined by Kelly Burnett from House Records, Jess Hines from the LIO, and my Fisheries Committee aide today is Darren Campbell. Seems to me we had this issue last time he was in the hall when I introduced him. Today we're going to resume with House Bill 112, an act repealing the Alaska Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission and transferring its duties to a Commercial Fisheries Entry Division established in the Department of Fish and Game and the Office of Administrative Hearings and providing for an effective date. And I would like to acknowledge Representative Johnson and Representative Millett have joined us as well. Thank you. The committee has a draft substitute to consider. Then we will have public testimony and we will wrap it up with comments from the CFEC commissioners and the sponsors. So I need a...
I move CSR House Bill 112, Work Draft 29LS0485/W.
And I will object for purposes of discussion. And I would like to have my staff carrying this bill, Reed Harris, come up to explain the changes from the original document.
Good morning, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Reed Harris. I'm staff to Representative Louise Stutes. The committee substitute for House Bill 112 rolls last week's Amendment Number 1 into the bill. There is a line-by-line explanation of changes in the committee packet provided. If you had specifics on the language changes, I believe we have Alpheus Bowler, the drafting attorney online, who could possibly answer those questions better than I could. The big change HB 112 makes is it defines which cases are sent to the Office of Administrative Hearings and empowers the Office of Administrative Hearings to make final adjudication rulings themselves without the approval or oversight of the Commissioner of the Department of Fish and Game. If I could turn the attention to page 13, section 20 of the bill, subsection B. Subsection B states, an administrative hearing on a contested case under this chapter shall be conducted by the Office of Administrative Hearings under AS 4464010. Notwithstanding AS 4464060E, the Office of Administrative Hearings shall render the final administrative decision. What this change does is it says that Department of Fish and Game will issue decisions on the 28 long pending cases until a decision is issued by the Department of Fish and Game and that decision is contested. Those cases will not go before the Office of Administrative Hearings. Another way of saying that is all approved permits will be handled in-house by the division. However, OAH will handle or take jurisdiction of cases that are contested. I believe that explains the changes to the bill, ma'am.
Thank you. I will remove my objection. Are there any questions from the committee? If not, then I will open public testimony. I'm going to limit public testimony to about 4 minutes. And I will start with that Julianne Curry, please, from United Fishermen of Alaska.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Julianne Curry. I represent United Fishermen of Alaska and our 36 member organizations that participate in fisheries throughout the state and its offshore federal waters. We also have over 450 individuals and businesses that are registered as UFA members. Every single UFA member is impacted by the results of HB 112. At this time, we should have a letter from United Fishermen of Alaska that came in late this morning. My apologies to the chair for the tardiness of that letter. But UFO is recommending that this committee hold on to the bill at this time. We have the results of a legislative audit that will be coming out in June, and that audit depends on what UFO will decide to do with this bill, and we recommend that this committee holds on to the bill until that audit is complete to make sure that this bill is sufficient to be able to move forward. So, Madam Chair, at this time, we are going to recommend that the committee hold on to this bill until our questions are answered in the legislative audit. Thank you.
Thank you.
Question.
Representative Millett.
Thank you. Good to see you, Mr. Murray. My question is, do you think that they've been effective in the last 3 years that they've adjudicated cases? I think they've only adjudicated a couple cases in the last 3 years at a pace that's at best crawling. Do you think that's a benefit to the state to have that big of a burden, financial burden on the state for this group to be only adjudicating a few cases a year at best?
Through the chair, Representative Millett, that's a fair question, and I'm glad that you asked it. It's pretty hard for me to look the committee in the eye and say that the amount of adjudications that happened in the last year is sufficient. However, we've worked really hard with CFEC to get them to develop a timeline for how they're going to implement changes within their organization, and we're going to continue to push on them to make sure that those remaining, I believe, 28 cases are going to be cleared off their desk as quickly as possible.
Follow up, Ms. Mel.
It just seems to me if there was better management within the CFEC group, the timeline would have been about 25 years ago when they started getting the amount of cases that they got. To get a timeline now when the focus is put on them, and this bill's moving. This is not a joke. I've heard within the division that people are saying it's, you know, don't worry. This bill's just going to sit here. It's not. This is a serious conversation that we're having with, you know, a group of employees that, you know, have been tasked with doing something, and some commissioners at best that have been dragging their heels. I don't think it's for us, and I can't imagine that the fishermen that are being adjudicated are pleased with the outcomes of this group also. I mean, have your fishermen weighed in on the pace of the adjudications? Have they talked to you of the frustrations? Have you had any feedback from your actual fishermen that are having cases before CFEC?
Through the chair, Representative Millett, we hear you loud and clear. I actually haven't had very many fishermen or very many board members express some frustration with the pace of the adjudications. I think a portion of that is mainly because they're busy focusing on their fishing business and they're looking at the task ahead and some of the challenges that they're facing within their industry. And looking at CFEC hasn't been a huge priority for them because the organization has functioned fairly well for their purposes. They're able to get their permits transferred extremely quickly. Permit cards are issued at lightning speed, and those are definitely things that our organization gravitates towards as being positives of CFEC. But with that said, one of the main things that our organization is supporting is the hiring of an executive director for that organization. We believe that by hiring an executive director, they're really going to be able to clean up some of the inefficiencies within CFEC, and they're going to be able to operate as a healthier organization.
And do you see any reason why this couldn't be done under the Fish and Game Department? I mean, do you see any reason why to keep them, you know, having the autonomy that they have? Don't you think they'd be better managed under a department?
The Chair, Representative Millett, the majority of the members of my organization have expressed to me that they would like to keep CFEC independent. However, as I stated, we're unable to take a position until our questions are answered in the legislative audit, which is going to be coming out in June. And I apologize for not having a firm answer for you in the meantime. We're definitely going to be working with you in your office once that audit comes out to be able to determine what path forward we think that should be taken with this bill. We're taking this issue very seriously. We're working very closely with CFEC, and I want you guys to know that our office is open at any time if there's anything that you need in regards to this bill.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions from this committee? Thank you, Ms. Curry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Uh-huh.
Jerry McCune. State your name and any affiliation you may have, please.
Madam Chair, my name is Jerry McKean. I represent Cordova District Fishermen United. I'm president of that organization and the current president of United Fishermen of Alaska. You have a letter in the packet. I've worked closely with CFEC over the 20-some-odd years on different many issues. I understand the seriousness of this situation, and I think, for me, keeping the division separate is a main issue. Because that's kept the politics out of it, it kept the governor out of it, And I think moving to Fish and Game, my guys are saying they do not understand whether we'll get the same service that we get today from Fish and Game that we're getting from CFEC. Regardless of, I know that we need to do all the cleanup, and then like Julian Curry testified, I'm leaning on the CFEC to clean up the shop. We'll get this thing turned around, get it efficient, and hire executive director to run the staff. But I don't believe Fish and Game is a place to house it. I don't have trust in the administrative law to do these cases in a timely manner. If somebody forgets about a case where some permit has to be transferred, they're in trouble for their fishing time. CFEC has done a lot of things. I mean, the guys in Yakutat are probably pretty happy CFEC was here when IRS came and seized set net permits on December 24th. And CFEC jumped in and defended that. Because it's a right, we don't have a right, we have a privilege to fish. And they defended that for all that time, and they did the Carlson case, that was a big case. And then out in Bristol Bay, we worked out in Bristol Bay to get CFEC was right there trying to make sure that the Division of Investments understood what they had to do to keep these residents getting loans and getting permits. They've worked with many different things, and I can't defend some of the things that went on with white cards. The white cards in Cordova are all cleaned up now, but there's a few cases that actually some of those guys fished for 20 years on a white card, so they were pretty lucky to fish on a white card for that long. They didn't have enough points to really get their permit, but I don't know all the details about. I just know that at this point we're telling them get the cases off. There's more cases coming. The Board of Fish use their research division. They also use them for resource for all kinds of legal things. And I think the division, as it was created, it's separate. And it needs to stay out of the politics. It needs to be have the right employees that are dedicated to the fishing industry, the integrity of the limited entry law. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. McKeon, what was December 24th? What year was that? Do you know?
Oh, it's a while back. I don't know if my memory goes that far back, but it was a little while back, and they seized the permits on December 24th, Madam Chair, and realized that the IRS was serious about taking these permits, such as a couple of Bristol Bay fishermen passed away, and their widows got the permits, didn't realize that they owed taxes, so they also tried to seize those permits. When those people, only, that's their only income. And when we created this law, we were pretty smart to make sure that corporations, banks, other entities could not get these permits, and it had to be in a person's name. So we were pretty smart, because otherwise there'd be a lot of permits that were lost today that would people wouldn't have that income. And in Bristol Bay, and I'm suspecting out in a lot of villages, that may be the only thing that provides any income for you. So they've been a good job protecting that and keeping the integrity of the law and in place.
I guess, in follow-up, I would add that I guess that kind of exemplifies our point here. Certainly at one point in time, the CFEC provided a very valuable service to fishermen, but it seems that that course has run its course, and thus for the reason of this bill. Are there any other questions from?
Just for the record, for those of us out here that aren't commercial fishermen, could you just explain to people what a white card is so we can have it on the record? Because I think there's some people that aren't commercial fishermen that don't understand what a white card is. Jerry, thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Millett. Probably one of the commissioners could explain it better, but when we first created limit entry, there was disputes on points like Vietnam vets. There was lots of different things that, so why those cases were being adjudicated, people were able to hold a white card until that those cases were settled or they decided that that person was eligible for a permit. That's the best explanation I can give, and one of the commissioners might be a little bit more elaborate.
And then just one follow-up. So that December 24th incident you're talking about was back in the 80s, correct?
Okay. Yeah. Somewhere in there.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. McKeon.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Martin Lindy. Thank you. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Martin Lindy. I appreciate you taking the time to listen to those of us in the commercial fishing sector and our voice on House Bill 112. I am here on behalf of the Southeast Alaska Seiners Association, a commercial fishing gear group with offices just across the street in the Alaska Fishermen's Building, with over 150 paying skipper and crew memberships, as well as over 75 paying business members. SEAS represents the interests of roughly 1,500 fishermen in the SO1A fishery and their families and communities throughout Southeast Alaska and beyond. With over 300 permits in our fishery, the SO1A permit holders contribute nearly $400,000 every year to the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission through permit fees alone, a significant amount in budgetary considerations, and we demand our voice be heard on decisions affecting a governmental agency that has worked hard on our behalf for years. SEAS is uniquely positioned to comment and evaluate CFEC's job performance. Unlike some who have used a snapshot in time to render judgment on an entire agency's workings, the Southeast Alaska Seiners Association worked for years with the commissioners and public servants of CFEC during the buyback of permits in the SO1A fishery. This nearly decade-long process involving multiple parties, one of whom, a very important one, is seated on the committee, was and continues to be to this day the only buyback program of its kind, not simply in the state, but in the country. And CFEC handled it just as it had to be done, in an exhaustive and exemplary manner. Chairman Twombly and Commissioners Brown and Ruprecht carry on the great work of past commissioners, such as Frank Holman, Mary McDowell, Peter Freilich, and with buybacks in various fisheries in Cook Inlet, Bristol Bay, and Southeast on the horizon, this state needs their full competence and expertise at work. We take a dim view of the way in which the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission has been portrayed in some corners, especially in light of our longstanding interaction with the agency. We want our commissioners, our mini Supreme Court of Commercial Fisheries, intact and able to move the agency forward of their own volition. The independence of CFEC must be maintained, and this will not happen if HB 112 is passed. We don't want CFEC being blown about in the political winds of the day. And while we are very happy with the leadership and the men and women of ADF&G and all that they do to ensure the sustenance of our fisheries for all manners of users, there's a special place for Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, and it is on its own. Southeast Alaska Seiners opposes House Bill 112, and we encourage you to do the same. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions from this committee?
Thank you, Madam.
Thank you. Okay. We have online, Al Birch. Al, are you there?
Good morning. Nice day here in Kodiak. The wind quit blowing.
State your name for the record, please, Al.
Al Open Birch. I'm testifying on my own behalf.
Go forward with your testimony, Al.
Yes, I really support getting that bill out of committee. But I am a member of UFA. I did not participate in any of the conversations with UFA on this. My history is owned boats here in the Gulf for 55 years. I was the executive director of the Trawlers Association for well over 30 years. As a member of the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council for over 30 years. I started arguing with CFEC many, many years ago when they started levying the fees for the license. At that time, they were throwing my small 54-foot trawlers in with the 380-foot trawlers in the Bering Sea, getting an average income so they could levy the fees on our licenses. I did manage to win that. We did get the Bering Sea and the Gulf separated. And, you know, that, but that still left the fee for a skiplet over $3,000. And the, and my argument was, you know, the way that thing is established is that that license is only good for the skipper that is on the boat. When he leaves, that license leaves with him. I've tried to move some young people up off the deck into the wheelhouse, and I was told even for one trip, I would have to, or the deckhand would have to pay the $3,000 in order to step into the wheelhouse. And Alan Osterman put a bill in through the committee, and this is where I really disagree with Julian. They held that bill, they held it, second year they held it, that killed it, and we never could get it introduced again. It never, never got out of committee. So I really hope the committee will move this forward. It'll put a little emphasis behind really dealing with the problem. The staff at the committee was great to work with. The bosses lobbied real hard because they got an excellent bureaucracy going there that they don't want to see disappear. I think with a little bit of time, the ADF&G would be real quick on coming up to speed on how to deal with this. And, you know, one thing I will, I'm not suggesting an amendment at this time, but I would really like to see some way that I can bring a young guy up off the deck without costing either him or me $3,000 for one trip to see if he's in the trailer or not.
Thank you, Al. If I could have you sum it up, we'd appreciate it. Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. We have Paul Shadura from Casilla. Are you there, Paul?
Yes, Representative Stokes. This is Paul Shadura. I'm here in the Kenai LAO. I am a resident of the Kenai Peninsula. Again, my name is Paul A. Shadura II. I'm a lifelong third-generation commercial fisherman. My family have fished within the Cook Inlet waters for over 100 years. I salmon fish in Cook Inlet. I have two CFPC limited entry permits, set net salmon permits. There are five in my family group. I also halibut and herring fish. Today I'm representing the South Cay Beach Independent Fishermen's Association, or SOCAI. We want to be clear, we adamantly oppose reconfiguring the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission into the schizophrenic Department of Fish and Game. We also are very much against allowing any more authority to the politically fractured Board of Fisheries. Article 8, Section 15, this section does not restrict the power of the state to limit entry into any fishery for the purposes of resource conservation and to prevent economic distress among fishermen and those dependent on them for a livelihood. So ratified by the voters in 1972, the state could then institute a limited entry program for distressed fisheries. An initiative to repeal the law was rejected by a wide margin of the voters in 1976. Clearly, the commercial fishing community feel very strongly in our area that to be independent, to have an independent body within the state agencies is a blessing. To place our trust into new divisions that we've had controversies over and change from subsequent administrations and funding programs is distress to us. We are concerned. The CFPC did 143 adjudications last year, 29,000 individual vessel permits yearly. This is not a recreational fishery. Commercial fishermen have a considerable investment, some in the thousands of dollars, to acquire the privilege to harvest the state's fisheries resources. When a sports division director in the Department of Fish and Game states that the department can handle it like a sports fishing license bought at the neighborhood grocery. This is an example of a poor understanding of the importance to the commercial fishing community. In the change language, just to read the new language, the department shall regulate entry into the commercial fisheries resources of the state, brings fear in my eyes. Commercial fishermen pay their way. CFPC is completely funded by commercial fishing participants' fee. In fact, there's a surplus at present. Please, can we consider your position? I was shocked that this bill, in fact, comes out of the Fisheries Committee, a committee that commercial fishermen have relied on as a voice to express changes that they wish to accomplish within the state government. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions from this committee? Thank you very much. We have Jamie Ross from the Homer LIO.
Should the green light come on? Can you hear me, Madam Chairperson?
We certainly can. State your name for the record, please, and any affiliation.
Yes, good morning, Madam. My name is Jamie Ross. I'm here in Homer, Alaska. I'm from Homer, Alaska. I'm also representing the Alaska Herring Seiners Association. I've commercially fished in Alaska. This will be my 34th year coming up this summer. I personally own 8 limited entry licenses and have held or currently hold 8 or 10 other non-limited entry licenses. I think that something that's important to point out is that the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission and the limited entry system in Alaska is one of the models of fishery management in the world. Many other systems across the United States and other countries have looked to this limited entry system as a way of ensuring sustainability in our fisheries, and I would like to think that the CFEC has played an important role in that our fisheries are the best in the world and continue to be so. I just found out about this bill, and I've talked to many, many friends of fishermen all throughout Homer here. None of us have heard about this bill, and so the HB 112 is very shocking to me. Look at our fisheries management as you have a biological aspect, which is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and then you have a business aspect, which is the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. Without the management of these licenses, like I say, a person like myself who has 8 of them, it's a difficult business proposition. And I think that I look at it as a separation of powers, just like our governmental branch has executive, legislative, and judicial branches. Keeping those aspects of fisheries separate is critical. You've heard this from Jerry, from Paul, from Julianne. The potential for politicizing the entry process is enormous within the Department of Fish and Game. I know for a fact that the CFEC is working on limiting a fishery right now. I've heard statements that they haven't limited one in 10 years. I have this fiscal analysis that I got from the this Office of Administrative Hearings, and I know that people like to look at us and we're like we're not in some kind of a steady state here. And commercial fisheries are constantly in change and motion. And to think that we're never going to limit an entry of fishery again, I think is extremely short-sighted. Like I said, I'm primarily a herring fisherman. Herring is going through some tough times right now, but who's to say that we don't completely change our herring fisheries in a short time period here and change them from a sacro fishery, which is what we currently have, to a cooter bait fishery. That would require the experts at the Fishery Entry Commission to reorganize the types of licenses, the type of limited entry licenses that we face hold right now. Personally, I just want to tell you a story.
I need you to sum it up here shortly, please.
Okay, anyway, I personally participate in the Sitka herring fishery, which as you all know is extremely short. My wife was injured. She had the permit in her name, and the CFEC was able to transfer the permit, an emergency transfer, within a 2-day period, and we were able to continue the fishery. If this was in the Office of Administration hearings, this could take up to 120 days, and many of our commercial fisheries are over within that time. So to sum up, Madam, I I think that this bill could potentially be one of the worst things that's ever happened to our commercial industry, which, as you all know, is the number two industry behind oil and the largest employer, public sector employer in the state of Alaska. Thank you very much, ma'am.
Uh-huh, thank you. And Representative Millett has a question for you.
Can you tell me how many permits you hold again? I didn't hear that part.
I hold 8 limited entry licenses, and I've held up to 8 or 10 over my career non-limited entry licenses.
What are your limited entry permits?
I hold 4 separate salmon licenses per seine and 4 separate herring per seine licenses. You can only participate in 1 salmon fishery per calendar year, and I fish multiple salmon. I've fished pretty much every area in the state of Alaska over my career.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Are there any other individuals online? I would like to note that we have the Deputy Commissioner from Fish and Game here. Also, if there's any questions from this committee for him.
I do, too.
Okay. Representative Price Tompkins, please. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kevin Brooks, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Fish and Game.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Brooks, can you speak to how you anticipate the department, should House Bill 112 pass, to handle buybacks?
Through the chair, Representative Chris Tompkins, I would envision that we would still have a research section. The folks that would do the economic analysis, the work, enumeration of permits, those kinds of things, they would be reporting that to the director of the division for processing a buyback endeavor. I don't have a clear answer for you on how that might implicate the Office of Administrative Hearings, but I do believe we'd still have the staff that are doing that kind of research and economic analysis that would still be performing that same function.
Yes, Representative Miller.
Thank you. Good to see you, Mr. Brooks. So can you tell me, do you think that philosophically you would remain neutral in adjudicating licenses and also it seems to me that there's just really one division within CFEC that does most of the work, which is the licensing section. They seem to be the ones that are the most busy. If I look at their report from 2013 to 2014, the licensing transfers and emergency transfers are all done in one section of the business. So that's pretty neutral. I would assume that those transfers are just a neutral fact of just transferring and waiting the period. But do you think on adjudications, because it would be in the Office of Administrative Hearings, that philosophically it wouldn't matter who the commissioner were, wouldn't be politicized, or would it be politicized? I mean, I that would be a fair question.
Through the chair, Representative Millett, I think it is a fair question, and I believe from the I've worked for the Department of Fish and Game for about 15 years. I think I've worked for 4 or 5 commissioners. I think they all come in with their own background and their experience. Some have a commercial fishing background, others don't. But in all cases, for all the commissioners I've worked for, they've all come in and have been very objective and dispose of their duties in a very fair and efficient manner. So I believe that they would be objective in carrying out this new role. I don't see that would be influenced. I'm not naive, but I believe that would be the case. I think there's a lot of attention on this. I don't think you could just do it in a vacuum and think you could do something that would be inappropriate. So with regard to the permits and licensing function and the transfers that occur, As I understand it, many of those are handled when there's a request to transfer a license. Staff handle those, and they handle them well. If if this bill proceeds, those same folks are going to be working in a division within the department performing that same function. Now, we would be looking for them, looking at the function, trying to find some efficiencies. We have staff that, as mentioned by one of the previous testifiers, that that issue recreational licenses, and that's true, and that's a majority of our work. We also issue about 25,000 commercial crew licenses in our department. But I believe there's probably an ability to, for staff that currently work for Fish and Game to help during peak periods and vice versa when commercial fishing is not really going hard and heavy. There's probably some ability for a more unified section to help each other out during peak periods of time. When it comes to an appeal on a transfer, I think the first review of that is handled by another staff within the division. So you're looking for an administrative remedy, mm-hmm. and you have the licensing folks, and maybe a transfer is denied. It's going to go to somebody else higher up in the agency, in the division, and most of those appeals are handled at that level. It's always an appeal of that decision, that second decision, that would go to an Office of Administrative Hearings. And we've talked to a hearing officer there and said, can you care for emergency transfers that have to happen immediately, that risk opportunity of a fisherman to get out and fish? It can't be 120 days, obviously. We can't go 4 months during a fishing season that might last a month. So I believe there's a way of doing that. I've testified that before. I don't think it's going to be without complications. I think we got to work at it, but I think it can be done.
Thank you. And with that, also the philosophy of the administrative law judges that we have, do you think that there's a political twinge on those that would prevent them from being fair and appropriate in adjudicating hearings based on commercial fishing? Is there a philosophy that goes down to our administrative law judges?
Through the chair, Representative Millett, absolutely not. I think they handle a wide portfolio of cases, and they're expected to be fair and impartial, and I think that would be the case here.
So there'd be some growing pains putting in Fish and Game, but there'd also be some, you think that there'd be some commonality between the Fish and Game Department and what CFEC does on a, actually their workload is very small now except for the licensing section. You think that administrative law judges could absorb the work that they're currently being done by the commissioners?
Through the chair, Representative Miller, yes, I do.
Do you see any cost-saving measures in this bill?
Well, the most immediate is that three commissioners are replaced by a single director. I mean, that's the biggest, most obvious one. But I think over time, as we have an opportunity to look at administrative functions, the licensing functions, the IT support, all those kinds of things, I do believe there are some efficiencies to be gained there.
Follow-up? And do you see any diminishment for commercial fishermen by moving it over in the Fish and Game, other than change is always difficult? And do you see a diminishment to any of our commercial fishers? I was the author of the buyback bill that we did. It was CFEC that helped, Frank Coleman from CFEC that actually helped us do that. But do you see any problem with helping organize and putting forward legislation if other commercial fishery groups want to do a fisheries buyback?
Through the chair, Whipson Millett, I don't foresee sitting in the chair today a diminishment of effort. I can't foresee every nuance or complication that could come up with those, but I think the commitment from the department is that we would work our hardest to address what comes up, and we don't have a crystal ball here, but there is undoubtedly a wealth of knowledge that exists with these three commissioners who and that have been doing this role for so long, and in that historical knowledge we don't have that, but we do have the body of their work that exists and the willingness to try and make it work.
Thank you.
I just, for clarification for this committee, I want to make sure that we all understand that every case will not be going to OAH. Mm-hmm. It will go, any transfer process will go in to the paralegal or whoever deals with it. They will make a decision if that decision isn't satisfactory, it will then go to the director who can adjudicate it. If that's not the applicant is still unhappy, it then proceeds to OAH, who makes the final determination. And then that individual still has the option of appealing to the Superior Court, just for any clarification. Representative Herron, you had a question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, does the department have, or the administration have a position on this legislation?
Through the chair, Representative Herron, we've not taken a formal position on the bill. We have put it on the record clearly. I think that we think we can make this work if it's the desire of the legislature to pass this. We can keep the functions going and do that in an effective manner.
Madam Chair, the reason for the question, just a comment, the reason for the question is the previous administration basically had a uniform rule that they did not take a position on any legislation. This governor has given the latitude to departments that they could take a position on a piece of legislation, so that's why I asked. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from this committee? Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone here? We have another individual who would like to. Oh, we have Alpheus Bullard, who is from Ledge Legal online.
For questions.
So if there's any questions, does this committee have any questions for Mr. Bullard? Right, I'm going to close it. I'm going to close public testimony right now. Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I have a question for Mr. Bullard.
Oh, please.
Alpheus, in the previous hearing on this bill, I asked in regards to Commissioner Twombly's comments about sort of the potential of upsetting the apple cart, or if a case went the wrong way, that it could create sort of retroactive precedent and implications. If I remember correctly, both you and the attorney from the Department of Law had relatively succinct comments to that question. I was wondering if you could offer any more perspective regarding that question.
Good morning. This is Alex Bullard, Legislative Counsel here at Ledge Legal. I'm Representative Chris Tompkins, through the chair. It's not clear to me what sort of occasions could create the retroactive precedent. I don't know what that means. The cases that the commission has heard have been heard, and the commission's decisions were final. If people contested those decisions, they were appealable to the Superior Court. It's not clear to me at all why, if the Department of Fish and Game is to assume these responsibilities of the commission with the Office of Administrative Hearing contested cases, what possible effect that could have on cases that have previously been decided.
Thank you.
Will the Department of Law be online, or are they available for questions today?
They are not online. Sorry. Would the CFEC commissioners care to address this committee?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would be happy to. My name is Benjamin Brown, and as I think you all know by this point, I am one of the commissioners of the Alaska Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. And I do have a multiplicity of notes, so I'll do my best to keep this as brief as possible, but some of it is in the nature of responding to some of the questions and comments that members of the committee have previously made. And I'll just go directly to what Mr. Bullard first said, and indeed, Madam Chairman, Representative Christ Tompkins' inquiry. He did ask a week ago if Law was going to be able to testify. I don't know why they're not here today. I didn't know that it was my place to arrange for them to be here. But but I don't know if Mr. Bullard has had a chance, because I know how extremely busy they are across the street in the Miller Building at Ledge Legal this time of year. He's been too busy to do a proper sessional analysis, which probably means he doesn't have time to pore over 40-page Supreme Court decisions that address the issue of retroactivity and the reopening of a previously entirely limited fishery. But the case law is there. Chairman Twombly spoke about it and cited the cases a week ago. So I guess where that leaves us in the context of the hearing this morning, you know, two-thirds, a little over two-thirds of the way of session, is people may want to read those cases on their own, or I've certainly tried to make myself available to each of you individually. Some of you I've been able to meet with, others you've been too busy to do so. But, I mean, the case law is there. And I think Mr. Milks from the Department of Law would indeed have been able to provide answers to those specific questions to the committee were he online this morning, but it's probably a little too late to ring him up and make that happen. So, I guess I would summarize that by saying I don't know that last week's hearing and this hearing can be reasonably thought to have adequately addressed some of the legal nuances that relate to CFEC law in Alaska, and it might be a wise course of action for the Alaska House of Representatives to consider taking the time to look at those specific judicial legal issues before moving forward. And with that, I'll come back to something you said last week, Madam Chairman, which is actions speak louder than words. And we certainly hope that our actions in the coming year will speak much, much more loudly than any words I can say to you right now. And we put that in writing in a one-pager, and I've tried to convey that to people individually. We certainly are aware that there is a lot of scrutiny being applied to us and a lot of justifiable questioning about the nature of our workload and the best way to go forward as an agency. I would respectfully submit that none of that militates in favor of the nuclear option of destroying the agency at one fell swoop. As a procedural matter, this bill, of course, was introduced by Representative Seaton last session, at the end of session, and he went on to request a legislative audit. He announced his intention to request a legislative audit at that time and then requested it in early August. And as I believe you all know, Madam Chairman, that audit is underway. So if Representative Seaton were here, I would probably say, do you really want to move on the bill before the audit you requested is done? Because audits are expensive, and they are the most in-depth scrutiny that is possible of a state agency that I know of, certainly more so than the lawsuit report was. They're objective, and I can tell you the auditors, three of them have been out there decamped in our office for weeks and weeks and weeks working on this product. And so there's going to be, I would hope, a valuable, objective assessment of the agency and the best way to go forward. And I just don't understand. I mean, I believe it was Representative Gaddis who said it at the beginning of session, that she thought this wasn't a crisis, it was an opportunity. Well, the budget situation is both. I mean, it is critical, it is a crisis, but it is also an opportunity. But that doesn't mean we have to jump the gun. So while actions may speak louder than words, I think it's also true that haste makes waste. And to go to the extremes that this bill does as a policy change affecting the regulation of commercial fishing in Alaska might be a wasteful and or hasty move. And I don't know that there's any pressing necessity to make a final policy decision right now. None of that is to undermine, I think, what we all agree is the need for us to make sure that we are doing things as efficiently as possible and spending the monies that we raise from these permit renewal fees in a manner that satisfies everyone, not just the great majority of people who testified this morning, but even the gentleman, Mr. Birch from Kodiak. Now, unfortunately, what it sounded to me like his testimony was is that he wanted to see House Bill 112 pass because Representative Osterman's bill, modifying fees, didn't get out of the committee. That was before my time here, so I can't really own up to having done anything to prevent that bill from moving. But if his concern is about fees, then perhaps a bill that addressed fees would be something better to move out of committee than a bill that abolishes the agency. Just my two cents on that. And I've not ever had a dialogue with Mr. Birch, so I'm not really that clear based on what I heard this morning about the full scope of his issues, but that's something we can certainly look at, or not, if we don't exist anymore as an agency. One thing I think I'd really like the committee to think about is this. Right now, my position has certain statutory requirements, and one of which is that I cannot have any ownership in the commercial limited entry permit or commercial fishing business interest. That goes completely away with the way this bill is currently written. So the Commissioner of Fish and Game and the Deputy Commissioners and the directors of a director of this division could have 8 permits, like the gentleman from Hoover did, and they could still be in a position. And again, I think there's some lack of clarity about what's going to go to OAH and what isn't, and we're probably not going to get that resolved this morning, but I do appreciate the efforts, and I said this last week when the amendment was brought up, to clarify that, but I still don't know that it is perfectly clear, because if the director of this division is going to be making adjudicatory decisions based on his review or her review of what comes up from staff, then that person is still making substantive administrative law decisions about who gets something or who doesn't get something. And the way the bill is currently drafted, that person could own permits and do that. Even if all those contested hearing, contested matters go to OAH, the regulations to limit a new fishery are still going to have to be drafted by someone, and it's not going to be OAH as far as I know. And if someone from OAH wants to say, no, we want to draft your regs as well, I would be surprised. So the amendment that was adopted last week took out the phrase quasi-judicial and regulatory, before regulatory agency, and now it defines this would-be division as a regulatory agency. Well, I don't know what a regulatory division, excuse me. I don't know what a regulatory division is. Departments adopt regulations, divisions generally don't. So it's going to be Mr. Brooks and his colleagues at Fish and Game who are going to adopt whatever regulations will set the exact criteria for a newly limited fishery. Now, maybe that's not a concern to them because they verified to OAH, according to this last fiscal note, that they do not presently envision that they would not, that they would limit a commercial fishery during the 5 years on the fiscal note. But again, as I pointed out last week, that ignores the mandate of the Limited Entry Act to consider limitation when Alaskans come forward and say, we think limitation needs to happen. So even if the adjudicatory decisions are not going to be made by this director who answers directly to this commissioner, the regulations that drive that process are going to have to be adopted by that Department of Fish and Game. And I would invite you to go look at 28AC at some of the very particular regulations that have been adopted in each and every fishery we've previously limited. I mean, they're very specific. They require expertise. And I'm not saying the expertise couldn't exist there, but the potential for conflict is ineradicable. I mean, especially if those people are in a position to continue owning limited entry permits. And so that's a pretty major flaw in the bill as it currently exists. Certainly it's one that can be cleaned up. So again, I did pre-warn you that I had lots and lots of things to say. I'll try to wrap this up because there may be some questions that you want to ask. There's just a great deal of work that we do. In addition to the caseload, which was two initial issuance limitations last year plus one right at the beginning of this year, there's 141 other cases that were done last year. And emergency transfers and permanent transfers are not just ministerial. They are all contested to the extent that someone's been told no when they want something. And that is a policy call, whether it can be a staff person, a paralegal, a director who's making that yes or no decision before it goes to OAH, but that has implications, and the farther it gets up that food chain, the likelier it is that people might question the extent to which they've been given due process and a fair and just hearing before that decision was set. And the sooner it went over to OAH, I think the likelier they would be unsuccessful in complaining about receiving due process. But that's just initial issuances, permanent transfers, emergency transfers. There's the entire category of miscellaneous decisions. And
if you want to make a few comments, that's okay, but you've already had an opportunity to testify, and so we don't want you to plead your case all over again. You're certainly welcome to make a few comments, though, and I'm thinking you're getting late to the end of your time limit.
We go back to another aphorism, brevity is the soul of wit, so I will try to keep that in mind. We have a whole different way of work, and buybacks were mentioned as well, and I think it's very important to mention, you know, Mr. Brooks sounds like he's willing to learn about how buybacks work, but that's something that would be kind of a holy body of work for them to do, and right now it's something that we've been pretty good at helping people do. And then reorganizations are another thing, which is different than limiting a new fishery, but it's we currently have some fishermen who want to use a different kind of gear and a specific fishery in the state, and that's something that we haven't done a lot of before, but I think there's going to be pressure brought to bear on some of the fisheries we've currently limited to make sure that the right gear types are being used for conservation reasons and also to make sure that the economic viability of the fishery is as maximal as possible for those who participate in it. So I was just going to point out, Representative Miller, you worked for Representative Corning when the Department of Community and Regional Affairs was merged into the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. And
actually, I came to work for him afterwards.
Did you? Okay, well, but you, I think you all remember that. And that's I mentioned that, Madam Chair, because that's the biggest example I can think of trying to downsize government and move one thing from one place to another. And that wasn't an independent agency within Commerce, but it wasn't an easy process, is my recollection. And I've not gone back and looked and seen how much time that took or what thought went into it and what cost-benefit analysis was done, but I would just respectfully submit that that same level of cost-benefit analysis ought to be done here, because I think we all agree. We want that. We want the highest quality product for Alaskans and Alaska's commercial fishermen, and we want to do it as economically as possible. And I think it's much more a question of how we get there than whether or not I can promise you I want to go there, and I will speak for my fellow commissioners. I know they're committed to getting to that right place as well. So with that, I thank you very much for listening to me. I'm sorry if I put 50 pounds of information into a 5-pound bag, as my Texan mother might say. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have, and I want to wrap up by saying thank you again, Madam Chairman, for your hard work and Mr. Harris's hard work and keeping a dialogue going with us at the agency, because I think that's crucial to getting a good result here.
Okay. Thank you. Questions?
Representative. First, I just want to address a few things. So the combination of combined departments, we're talking about a couple hundred employees to a couple hundred employees, two commissioners, two different missions. I think that's apples to oranges. I don't think that's a good comparison or a fair comparison, because I think you're throwing fear in the eye of maybe doubt. I don't know what the intent was. But destroying the agency, I take offense to that, because we're not trying to destroy an agency. We're not trying to destroy your agency. There's no vendetta here. There's none. There is a body of work that has been provided to us to look at over the last 30 years, and we have seen a dwindling of cases that you've adjudicated. The facts are blatant here, that the most adjudications that you've done were done back in the 80s. So destroying an agency is not my mission. My mission is efficiency. And that is right. Budgetary crisis does add for efficiencies and opportunity, and I see this as an opportunity. As far as conflict goes, I think that we have a whole Department of Law. We have the administrative law judges will look at that conflict and make sure there's a firewall, just as you did when you were organized for the first time under Jay Hammond. I think that those firewalls will be very well put in place, and regulations can be written. So there is that disparity between someone who doesn't have a commercial fishery entry permit and adjudicating cases, and even structurally looking at transfers and things. I think it's ridiculous to infer that the Fish and Game Department doesn't have the ability to see where conflict could arise. And as it goes to fishery buybacks, complicated? I know they're complicated. I had no knowledge of what fishery buybacks were, but I learned it in one session. I didn't learn it to the expertise that Frank Holman had, but I learned it well enough to carry a bill on the House floor and get it passed and put into law as a first fisheries buyback. So I think education can happen with anybody. I think we hire for that ability to learn and absorb. So I appreciate you fighting for your job. I appreciate you doing that, and you're not on trial here. This is merely a fact of not personalities, nothing but just looking at an institution that was once in place for a very good reason, that now may be able to have an opportunity to be absorbed under the Fish and Game Department with the same firewalls in place, with the same missions, with the same measures, and the same outcomes. Because what I care about is that commercial fishermen are kept whole, that there is no drawback for a commercial. I was a commercial fisherman for 25 years. I understand what this means and what this means for a livelihood. If you don't have your permit transferred in 24 hours, I know what missing out on a fishing period looks like, especially if it's in the peak of Bristol Bay on July 4th. I know that 10,000 pounds of fish can go by the wayside. Now, I know there's a dollar amount attached to every single one of those fish every year, so I'm fully aware of what we are doing here. This is not done behind the curtain. This is done in a full factual committee hearing where we're understanding exactly what has happened. Your workload has diminished greatly. It's a huge budget, and I understand that commercial fishermen pay for this, but it goes into the general fund. We don't have dedicated funds here in the legislature. So I appreciate you fighting for your job and fighting for your other commissioners' jobs, but I think we have to be realistic in our expectations from every single department of our government. And so for me, it's frustrating that I'm implied that I don't know what I'm doing, or I'm not thinking about things, because I take this with a very heavy heart. This is not an easy thing for me to do, is to cut jobs and slice down government. It is difficult at best. So I appreciate you, and you're not on trial. I think that you've done a great job with the time that you've had there, and I am merely looking for ways to streamline government in the state of Alaska. That is what my voters sent me here to do, and that's what I do in every single committee I sit on.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative
Miller.
Sorry.
Representative
Christ Tompkins. Thank you. Commissioner Brown, there's previous testimony about wanting to insulate a lot of decisions made currently within the CFEC from political influence. And in your testimony, an example of that, and I want you to correct me if I'm getting this wrong, was that if a new fishery is limited, regulations will need to be promulgated, and those regulations will have to go through the commissioner's office. And because the commissioner's office or people working in the commissioner's office may or may not have interests in certain commercial fisheries, there's a potential for a conflict of interest. Am I stating that argument or concern accurately?
Madam Chairman, Representative Christ Tompkins, I guess there's two different potential areas of concern. The one I initially wanted to make committee members aware of, and I did not mean to impugn your level of devotion to this, Representative Millett, to the chair at all, but I mean, there's just a lot of moving parts going on here, and this is only the second hearing on a very complex bill. So the elimination of the prohibition on having an interest in a limited entry permit doesn't exist in the way the bill is currently written. So that's kind of I guess red herring might be too obvious a term, but that's a really obvious example of something that's a diminution in the prophylactic structure of the agency that prevents the potential for conflict. There's the larger issue of, which I think several of the witnesses who are fishermen voiced, they tend to think of the Department of Fish and Game as a political place. The word schizophrenic was used. That's not a word I've heard used to describe fish and game before. So there's two things. No longer is there a prohibition on the commissioner who oversees this director or this director from actually holding a permit, the value of which might be affected by the limitation of a new fishery and the regulations adopted to limit that new fishery. But there's the larger issue of that commissioner oversees the head of the biological arm, the Division of Commercial Fisheries, who oversees all the managers out in the field. And they may have things they would like or not like to see happen, and those may trickle back up to the commissioner's office one way and then trickle back down over to this division another way. And if it's all within the Department of Fish and Game and there's no independent structure, I don't know how we're going to know that's going to happen. So there's two concerns about the maximum ethical structure of the organization were the bill to become law. And to be fair, the Executive Branch Ethics Act will still apply to everyone who works there, just as it applies to us and to them now separately. And that, of course, as you all know, prohibits the taking or withholding of official action in a manner that can benefit oneself. So that would still be there, but that's a much more generic tool than a prohibition on ownership of any commercial fishing interest that currently exists. Laura?
Is it fair to say the short answer to my question would be yes?
Yes.
There's, okay.
Madam Chairman, yes, Representative Stephens.
Yes.
For now, yeah.
So no. To your point that the commissioner is appointed, so are the three commissioners on CFEC. They're appointed by the governor. So I think, if we want to talk about politics and this and philosophy, I mean, you three are appointed by the governor and confirmed by the legislature, too.
And, Madam Chairman, are only renewable for cause. And there's a due process set up for that, and that's just different. I'm just saying that's different. There's no provision for renewal of the cause for this director or for the commissioner of Fish and Game. The governor can fire the commissioner, and the commissioner can fire the director the way it's currently structured, with no hearing and really no reason. And so, with all due respect, that is a striking difference, and it's one that can be corrected. Absolutely, it can be corrected, but the current version of the legislation does not correct it. That was my point, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions from Ms. Smith?
Ready for motion?
Yes.
No. Not yet.
Oh, you haven't spoken yet.
That's right. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. If I might, conversations like this are going around this building for every department, for every division, and maybe because this one happens to be the first, it's a little more heated. But every piece of legislation that's been passed with a fiscal note in the last 4 or 5 years is being reviewed, and everything's being looked at. We are in a new day. $3 billion plus deficit. So for anyone, and I heard, to expect the same level of service. I know you guys pay for it and contribute to it. That's true in a lot of them. But anyone who expects the same level of service in Alaska tomorrow as they're getting today is not awake. Things are changing. We have to make serious decisions. It is not personal. You just happen to be first. I want to address something that was said about holding the bill over. This is a process. There are two more committees. This is a living document. It can and will be changed. I've never seen one that went through that didn't get changed a little bit. So it goes to fisheries, it goes to finance, it goes to the floor. If this bill is parked anywhere, it needs to be in Senate rules where we can absolutely, at the end of the day, make a quick decision on what we need to do. It doesn't need to be in the first committee referral. So I'm encouraging us to move this on, to position it, gather the information as we go, but position it to where a decision can be made and not at the, 30 days left in the next session where we don't have time to do anything that we need to do. So I encourage us to move on to position it to where it can either live or die based upon its merits. But if it stays in this committee, the option of it dying regardless of the merits are greater than if it's sitting in another committee further up or down the food chain, depending on how you want to look at it. So with that, Madam Chairman, I highly encourage us to move this on and send this baby to its next committee.
Thank you.
Before we do, I have a few more questions.
Okay.
Commissioner Brand, when was the last commercial fishery in Alaska limited?
2004-2005.
Which fishery?
That was one of the Southeast dive fisheries, and I was going to... The last one was a vessel-based limited fishery, and that was the weather-based scallops, of course, and the Korean hair crab.
Our favorite fisheries.
Yes, and that one is, of course, the only one in our history of 68 that has reverted to open access status. So there is still a vessel-based limited entry system for hair crab on the books. It is somewhat of a virtual fishery because the conservation concerns have never allowed for that fishery to be open.
What fisheries, if any, do you actively anticipate may be limited in the future?
And the difficult thing about that is when we say that publicly, it can, and in the past has had the effect of encouraging people to fish for history. So I can certainly name them if you'd like. There are three specific fisheries, and when I've been able to meet with people individually, I've kind of mentioned them, around the state, and they're two different species, three different geographical areas. And they are ones where we have literally had fishermen come and want to come to Juneau and sit in our conference room. 10 of them meet with us and say, this is why we think you should go forward with this. There's been much talk about the great work our research staff does and also some concern that we've not been doing as many optimum numbers. We haven't done anywhere near as many optimum number studies as the statute clearly calls for. I'll be the first to admit that. That doesn't mean some sort of analysis of what the right number for existing fisheries doesn't need to be done, and it doesn't have to be done by an independent agency necessarily. I have my beliefs about why that's preferable. So there are three specific fisheries, three specific species around the state that are at the point where it's more likely than not that one of those or more would be limited in the next, in the period envisioned by the fiscal note would be what I would say. And that's why I just didn't think that the affirmation given by Fish and Game to OAH, and there's no way they could know.
We want to stick to the question here.
Thank you.
Can I follow up on one of the questions?
Please.
Wasn't the last limited entry the sea scallops and hair crab done legislatively?
It had to be done, Madam Chairman, Representative Johnson, it had to be done legislatively because it was vessel-based. It was a dramatic departure from, and many of you who were here even recently know this, it was such a dramatic departure from the skipper-based limitation system that it required a whole new section of our statute to bring into effect. That's correct.
That's a yes or no. We did that last.
Yes, we did.
Okay. I have two more questions, one for Commissioner Brown and one, if I may, for Deputy
Please.
Commissioner Brooks.
Representative Christ Tompkins.
And Commissioner Brown, you referenced that there's a fishery that may be changing the gear type used. Are you referring to the chow and sablefish fishery?
We have had concerns expressed that using long line is worse for bycatch reasons. It creates more bycatch than pot. But they're separate fisheries now. And that's one of those sort of unanswered questions. Can we merge two existing fisheries? Do we have to unlimit them and re-limit them? But your constituents well, through the chair, Representative Christ Tompkins. That is the area that we've been inquired about.
Okay. And I have a final question for Deputy Commissioner Brooks, if he's available.
Certainly, he is.
And I will step down probably on all of your great pleasures. Thank you all very much.
No, we love you. We don't say that.
For the record, Kevin Brooks, Deputy Commissioner of Fish and Game.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Deputy Commissioner Brooks, I guess I sort of have a general question relating to the ability of the department to insulate decisions or regulations from political influence or influence of interest within the department, and I'll try to manifest that general question with several specific questions, being, how do you foresee ADF&G or the process under this bill being able to limit new fisheries if that's required or change the gear types used for existing fisheries? And generally speaking, could you speak to any of the issues that were raised in the last 5 to 10 minutes of testimony regarding creating insulation from different interests, competing interests that may or may not exist within ADF&G as you proceed with the limiting of fisheries in Alaska?
Through the chair, Representative Chris Tompkins, I think the latter question is an easier one for me to answer. We have people in the department certainly that are much more familiar with fisheries and how they're prosecuted and limited and those types of things, and specifically our director of commercial fisheries is much more knowledgeable about those specific types of things than I am. I'm not a biologist. But I will say, as far as insulating, the department operates in a bit of a, there's a lot of scrutiny on the things that we do now. I mean, in the Ethics Act has been referenced before. None of us can take an action that would personally benefit us or a family member. We have an ethics SOP. I mean, this is something that's highly focused in the department. Even people declaring outside employment, can a department employee harvest a species that we manage or a species that we don't manage? Or because our biologists, they have a lot of interest in the resources. They like to recreate and do those types of things that they work on as well. And, you know, people run trap lines, and we have things to care for that. To suggest that we're not going to insulate decisions or be careful in how we do the things that we do, I don't know. It's troubling to me, really, because we go to great lengths to make sure that there aren't conflicts. And I think it was best articulated, I think, by Representative Millett, where when CFEC was set up, these things had to be established. We're going to have to bring it in and care for it as well and make sure that we have firewalls in place to make sure that there's not undue influence. I can't really speak to a hypothetical, but I can just tell you that it's not something that we don't consider and take care of currently, that we wouldn't continue to do so if this bill passed.
And could you speak to specifically the limiting of entries and creating regulations?
Well, through the chair, Representative Chris Tompkins, we have department regulations and we have Board of Fish and Board of Game regulations. So the two boards generate a volume of regs as we go through the regulatory cycle. Every 3 years, all parts of the state are heard on fisheries, and actually now we've gone to a three-year cycle on the Board of Game. So we've always looked at the board regs separately from our department regs, and we have regs for private nonprofits, hatcheries, and any number of things. We have regs on our licensing program. We have folks that work and develop reg packages, so that expertise does exist within the department. We haven't anticipated every last detail of how we would do CFEC regs once CFEC became a division, but we do reg packages now, and we do them in the board process, we do them in the department. So as far as limiting fisheries, I'm getting into an area that it's not my area of expertise, and I'm a little less comfortable answering those specific questions because we have other people in the department that are much better able to answer and more knowledgeable on the topic.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to ask a few questions.
Certainly. So any other questions? Then I would ask the sponsor to come up and make any final comments. Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Brooks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Reed Harris, staff to represent students yourself. I need to state on the record two things. They're brought up by the commissioner who spoke prior to myself. One, page 13 of the bill, section 20, line B. Again, the language states that OAH will make decisions only on contested cases. That reads very clear to myself, to the office, and I run this by legal as well, that they will be hearing cases where there is an issue. So if the division cannot handle it within the division, that's when OAH will take over jurisdiction of the case. Until that point, the division can say essentially yes. If the paralegal says yes, I would imagine it is signed off on. If the division director says yes, I would imagine it is signed off on. If it goes to OAH and they say yes, it is still signed off on. I don't see how this is a shortfall into fishermen as far as having three commissioners make the decision and then going to the Superior Court or going through the same steps with the Division of Commercial Fisheries Entry as it would be. Second point I need to make, and I need to state this on the record, page 46, section 122 of the bill is the transition language. And I'd like to turn your attention to lines 8, 9, and 10. I will read for you. Certificates, orders, and regulations issued or adopted under authority of the law amended or repealed of this act remain in effect for the term issued or until revoked, vacated, or otherwise modified under the provisions of this act. This has been an issue with the bill and has been brought up in both the hearings. The commission made a statement that due to the division or OAH managing permit applications, courts could interpret this as a change to the rules, and therefore they could open up past permit cases or entire limited entries. I spoke with the drafting attorney again at our legal department, and I was assured that previous adjudications cannot be reopened because of the transfer of duties if HB 112 were to pass. The statute does not prescribe a new direction for management of limited entry. Rather, it changes who makes the rulings on remaining and future cases. If there's any questions regarding the language in the bill? No. Without a brief wrap-up, there is much testimony today in favor of continuation of CFEC, and it is understandable that fishermen are apprehensive about the elimination of the CFEC. The Commission has an excellent history of service to fishermen through successful limited entries and permit issuance when the immediate right to fish is at stake, as in transfer and emergency transfer cases. Representative Johnson, thank you. He brought up essentially the hard line is the Department of Fish and Game is going to see a budget cut of slightly more than 10% this year, and the governor stated the DFG will be seeing a 25% budget cut over the next 3 years. These numbers go beyond budget cuts. This is a restructuring of how the government, including the Department of Fish and Game, functions. All the members present here put hard work into the operating budget, and you've seen the reductions already. In order for the department to provide necessary services to fishermen, the legislature needs to look at some hard cuts and or trade-offs. House Bill 112 is one way to ensure fishermen continue to enjoy the use of a fragile resource and see continued service in limited entry permit and vessel license issuance. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any questions from this committee?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I just want to say it on the record. I don't see this as the death of the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. I see it as a rebirth under a new design. I don't see it as the death. I don't think that this is the end all to be all to Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, to any type of commercial fishing regulation or permit transfer. I see this as an opportunity, like Representative Gatta said, like Commissioner Brown said, that this is an opportunity to streamline. I don't think we'll see any less caring for commercial fisheries. I don't think that we'll be diminishing commercial fishers at all. I think that this is a necessary and needed conversation that we're going to have, like Representative Johnson said, on every division and every department in our state.
Thank you. And no other comments from this committee? No questions? Then I would entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move committee substitute for House Bill 112, Fisheries, as amended, work draft 29LS0485-W from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Do I hear any objection? With that, House Bill 112 passes from this committee. Thank you. And this committee will meet again Tuesday, March 31st. We'll be holding confirmation hearings for CFEC Commissioner Designees Ben Brown and Vern Ruprecht. Is that funny? Well, moving forward. There's no further business to come before this committee. We will adjourn at 11:24.